Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how is it going?
Hi, Jason here. It's going pretty great, Kyle. How's it going with you?
Great. Much better than 30 seconds ago from the last episode.
Oh, I was in such a rut. I was down in the dumps. But now we're doing a whole new episode. Your cats did a cute thing in between. That was refreshing.
A lot less Tim this episode too. So
that's what it was. I knew a massive weight had been lifted off my shoulders and my spirits lifted.
Yeah.
That must be what it is.
And it's weird to think that in those 30 seconds and the actual timeline that these episodes will come out, you'll have like 7 more days of snap streak going.
Wow. I think, because we're at like, what, 1920 something right now? Sure. With 7 more days, we might hit like 1950, 1970. Who knows how far we'll go in 7 days?
All right. Well, of course, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs has been covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 9, we are talking about the Royal Tenenbaums. Now, I know for a fact we have seen this before, because we've actually talked about seeing this before together. I went and sourced the episode. I found out which one it was. It was the Breaking the Waves episode
of
season 1, where we talk about this movie because we saw it together in theaters.
Aw, what a great movie going experience. Garno.
Old Metro Cinema. Yeah, that was on November 12th. I have them all written down, so I know exactly when we saw it. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, but I don't think either of us have watched it since then, have you?
No.
So it's been about a year, but before that, we hadn't seen it before.
No, it was fresh a year ago.
Yeah.
And now it's just old, played out kind of shtick.
And I'm very happy about that because I wanted to rewatch it after watching it the first time. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was good to see if it still held up on my initial thoughts for it.
I'm also really glad that this was a rewatch, both because I wanted to rewatch it and also I feel like I actually had a better experience on the rewatch.
Yeah, I think I also agree. Well, let's get into it. If you're interested in this film, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen The Royal Tenenbaums yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. Without further ado, let's get into it.
The Royal Tenenbaums is a 2001 American comedy drama film directed by Wes Anderson and written by Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson. This is starring Gene Hackman as Royal Tenenbaum, Angelica Huston as Etheline Tenenbaum, Ben Stiller as Chaz Tenenbaum, Gwyneth Paltrow as Margot Tenenbaum, Luke Wilson as Richie Tenenbaum, Owen Wilson as Eli Cash, Danny Glover as Henry Sherman, and Bill Murray as Raleigh St. Clair. This has a runtime of 109 minutes and was released everywhere December 14th, 2001. What did you think of this second round with the Royal Tenenbaums?
I really loved it. I find this movie so delightful, but I also find that it can really hit you with emotions. There was one beat like, we'll get to it later, but Richie makes a decision and it just kind of, it seems like it comes out of nowhere. Obviously, you know why he does it, but it is shocking in this sort of like vibrant, colorful world of Wes Anderson to have that happen. And there's also one line that Ben Stiller says later where he's talking to Royal and he says, "We've had a hard year, Dad." I'm like, and he doesn't even say it like that distraught or emotionally, but he does have something in his voice where you can tell that he's kind of suppressing emotion.
Yeah.
And it fucking hit me. I don't know. It's just, it's really sweet. And the whole movie is just delightful.
Oh yeah, of course. It's Wes Anderson. It's color palettes everywhere. Yeah. Symmetry out the caboose.
Yeah.
And I felt like watching this at home on my own was actually a more emotionally impactful watching of it. Something about watching it in a theater, some of the highs and the lows didn't hit as hard.
Yeah.
But just sitting there on your own with your thoughts watching this is really impactful.
Totally. I find that this movie, unlike some of later Wes Anderson films, does have like a rough edge to it.
It does, unexpectedly.
Yeah. And I really vibe with that because it's like, It's clearly polished and really well thought out, but it does have this sort of gritty feel. Maybe it's those shitty cabs coming through like all the time. Like, but it just, yeah, it has this sort of edge to it and this energy that I really liked. Mm-hmm. Well, do you want to get through the plot?
Let's get into a plotty.
All right. I'm going to read straight to the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's the Royal Tenenbaums. Royal Tenenbaum explains to his three adolescent children, Chaz, Margot, and Richie, that he and his wife, Etheline, are separating. Each of the children achieved great success at a young age. Chaz is a math and business genius from whom Royal steals money. Margot, who was adopted, was awarded a grant for a play that she wrote in ninth grade. Richie is a tennis prodigy and artist who expresses his love for Margot through paintings. Royal regularly takes Richie on outings without the other children. Eli Cash is the Tenenbaum's neighbor and Richie's best friend. Also part of the Tenenbaum household is Pagoda, the trusted valet. 22 years later, Royal is kicked out of a hotel that he has been living in. The children are in a post-success slump, with Richie traveling the world on a cruise ship following a breakdown. He writes to Eli revealing his romantic love for Margot. Chaz has become overprotective of his sons, Ari and Uzi, following his wife Rachel's death in a plane crash. Margot is married to neurologist Rayleigh Sinclair, from whom she hides her smoking and her checkered past. Rayleigh is conducting research on a subject named Dudley Heisenberg. Holy shit, those two paragraphs were just set up.
Like, yeah, wow.
Wow.
Then the plot of the movie.
Yeah. Ethel's longtime accountant, Henry Sherman, proposes to her. Learning of Henry's proposal, Royal claims that he has stomach cancer to win his wife back and win his children's affections. Etheline calls her children home and Royal moves back in and sets up medical equipment in Richie's room. Royal learns of Chaz's overprotective nature and takes his grandsons on an adventure involving shoplifting and dogfighting. On their return, Chaz berates him for endangering his boys while Royal accuses Chaz of having a nervous breakdown. Eli, with whom Margot has been having an affair, tells her that Richie loves her. Royal discovers the affair and objects to Margot's treatment of Rayleigh, who confides to Richie his suspicions of Margot having an affair. He and Richie hire a private investigator to survey her. Meanwhile, Henry investigates Royal's cancer claim and discovers his hospital had closed, his doctor does not exist, and that his cancer medicine is only candy. He confronts Pagoda, the servant, and gathers the family to tell them that Royal has been lying about his illness. Afterwards, Royal and Pagoda move out. Richie and Rayleigh get the private eyes report on Margot, which reveals her history of smoking and sexual promiscuity, including a previous marriage to a Jamaican recording artist. Both men take the news quite hard, with Richie going into the bathroom, shaving off his hair and beard, and slashing his wrists in an attempt of suicide. Dudley finds him and Rayleigh rushes him to the hospital. As the Tenenbaums sit in the waiting room, Rayleigh comforts Margot and then leaves. Richie escapes and meets with Margot to confess his love. They share their secret love and they kiss. Royal decides that he wants Etheline to be happy and finally arranges for a divorce. Before Henry and Etheline's wedding, Eli, high on mescaline, crashes his car into the side of the house. Royal rescues Ari and Uzi, but the boy's dog, Buckley, is sadly killed. Enraged, Chad chases Eli through the house and wrestles him to the ground. Eli and Chaz agreed that they both need psychiatric help. Chaz thanks Royal for saving his sons and for buying them a Dalmatian named Sparkplug from the responding firemen as a replacement for Buckley. 48 hours later, Etheline and Henry are married in a judge's chambers. Sometime later, Margot releases a new play inspired by her family and past events. Rayleigh publishes a book about Dudley's condition. Eli checks himself into drug rehabilitation facility in North Dakota, and Richie begins teaching a junior tennis program. Chaz becomes less protective of his children. Royal seems to have improved his relationship with all his children and seems to be on better terms with Etheline. He then has a heart attack and dies at the age of 68. Chaz accompanies him in the ambulance on the way to the hospital and is the only witness to his death. The family attends his funeral, where the epitaph dubiously reads that he died tragically rescuing his family from the wreckage of a destroyed sinking battleship. But that's the Royal Tenenbaums.
Wow. There's a lot that happens. There's a lot going on in there. That is some tight stuff.
Yeah, a little bit of incesty relationships. Slightly.
Yeah, there are quite a bit of one. I think it's one of the driving forces, actually, the incesty relationship.
It is weird that it's like a sweet incesty relationship, but and also that they bring it up so much. Because you easily could have just brought up that Margot is an adopted sister and therefore, you know, not blood. And so if they were to have sex, it's not so weird, but it is still but weird that you were raised.
It is still you. That's still your sister.
Yeah.
And I think it is kind of strange that it's building the case that an adopted sibling's not really a sibling. That doesn't. Yeah. I don't know if that's really true. I feel like that's still a part of your family.
Yeah. But no, it is a bit weird.
That's Wes Anderson for you. It's all symmetry, colorful things, and incest.
Yeah. I mean, and there's so many characters in this movie, but I think all of them get a pretty good amount of play. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Richie is kind of the main character other than Royal.
Yeah. I think Royal's technically the lead and the main, but a lot of, as far as ensemble casts go, I'm always impressed with how well-rounded every character is and how natural and like feel good their arcs are. Like, I feel like everyone's a complete person who learns something. And even Royal, by the end, you do like him, even though he's a son of a bitch.
And perfectly acted by Gene Hackman.
Absolutely.
He's so good in this role. And like, even both the Wilson brothers, Owen and Luke Wilson, they're both really great. Obviously, Richie has this really dark side to him at the time. And Ben Stiller, I really like in this too. Like, I mean, obviously you have mentioned in the plot, he's like an overprotective father, but he seems like really manic and clearly damaged and has this sort of hidden trauma that he kind of suppresses behind his overprotectiveness of his children. And like, these are all like really complicated and unique characters and all well acted by all of the actors.
Yeah. And this is the kind of role that isn't really a Ben Stiller role. And he does so well in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like Gwyneth Paltrow probably does one of the hardest jobs in terms of making her character endearing, because the whole point of her is that she's quiet, secretive, doesn't let people in. But she still is an endearing character who you feel for, because she's had a hard life and has never really been included and or never felt in any one area like she belongs there.
Yeah. The one character that does feel somewhat out of place sometimes is Bill Murray's character, really.
Yeah.
I understand his being there, being Margot's ex-husband. And like, I re-listened to how we talked about it in that episode of season one. And it does feel like against type for Bill Murray, in a sense.
Very much.
And like nowadays, I don't think you would do that except for Wes.
Yeah.
But like, it seemed a little bit strange. I thought he was going to be more fun, but maybe that was just my expectation because it's Bill Murray. And like, he seemed like a character that didn't really get a whole arc and was just kind of there sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, because it might have been a case too where like, you get Bill Murray, obviously, because Wes Anderson and Bill Murray have like a really good relationship and Bill Murray wants to be in Wes Anderson's films. But like, he's playing the ex-husband of one of the main characters and he doesn't need to be there all the time. Mm-hmm. But you're just finding reasons to put him in there.
Yeah.
And so like, that was the one character that sometimes I felt like didn't belong in some cases. But I also do understand it's his purpose in the narrative. But
yeah. I feel like the saving grace of his character is that it's a very Wes Anderson character, so it's not horrifically out of place. But when you look at how great all the other characters in this are, he does stick out like a sore thumb, especially with Bill Murray acting him. You kind of expect him to steal the show when he really is just a background kind of guy who has some pain but doesn't really do much with it. He's a character who's there to kind of further Margot's story, and that's it.
Etheline and Henry are also really great. I really like who plays Henry Sherman?
Oh, Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. Yeah, he's got like this very stern, but somewhat kiddish. Like, he's very nervous around Etheline sometimes, which is so sweet and endearing. But then he does have this kind of like firm stance, especially when it comes to Royal.
Yeah.
Like, I love their like bickering in the kitchen that one time and they were about to like go at each other. Like, I really like Henry as a character.
Yeah, he's got a good vulnerability to him where he can be nervous and not understand and not do the right things and still be a really cool character.
Yeah. And be a chartered accountant.
Thank you for the representation. You know what? We need to start making a name for it. Accountants aren't just people who hate their job and quit. One of them likes it. And that's probably a good ratio, actually. I'll take it.
Yeah. What were kind of your favorite moments from this movie?
On the rewatch, especially, the scene where Richie attempts suicide is so hard hitting.
Yeah.
Especially with how like the audio syncs up. And I think having like, because I watch this on my computer, so I have like a good sound system with the headphones and whatnot. God, that is emotionally so good. When he just quietly says to himself, "Tomorrow I'm gonna kill myself."
And then he does it today.
And then he does it today ahead of schedule. That you under promise, over deliver. But that was really good. I really felt like that has so much hit to it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his scenes are so strong.
Yeah.
And I always, after this movie, makes me think, like, how is Owen Wilson planets ahead of him in star power when, like, he can deliver some really good scenes and performances?
Yeah. Yeah. And the music really helps with that scene too, because it's just kind of like a soft, I don't know what the song is, but it's a soft guitar song that's happening just over top of it. And it's not interfering, but it is kind of setting that mood. And it just like adds to the, it feels almost out of place in this movie.
Yeah.
But like, I totally understand it. And it's so weird when they look at his scar after.
Yeah.
Marco's just like, can I see it? And I'm like, ooh, yeah. Just kind of that reminder.
Off-putting, yeah. And I also really enjoy the scene of Royal when he shows up to the hospital. Like, I think that's a really strong character building moment for him, where he's like, well, we got turned back, but what if we shimmy up there and hop that window?
Yeah.
And then he's just right behind him.
Yeah.
But it's like really sweet seeing that he is actually that dedicated to his kids now. And they've built that relationship that like, he's not taking an easy out by being denied that. He's going to find a way there, even if he doesn't need to in the slightest.
Yeah, I also like the relationship between Royal and the grandsons.
Yeah.
I think that was sweet. Like, I think that's where I liked Royal in a lot of places, was because, like, clearly those two kids were being a little bit fawned over, and they needed a little bit of excitement, a little bit of fun. Mm-hmm. And
a little dog fighting.
Royal really wanted to get in there.
Just a little dog fighting, a healthy amount.
Yeah, but like, it just seemed, those were just like fun scenes. And you could tell those kids were probably having so much fun. And like, if you were that kid, you would probably be having a lot of fun. I mean, the dog fighting would probably have terrified me.
Probably, yeah. But it's kind of like giving a kid a cigarette too early. It keeps them off of it later. Now they're not going to get addicted to dog fighting when they're older. So good grandfathering, nice. Royal. Good work out there.
Who is your standout for character, though?
Both Luke and Ben Stiller really strike me as like unexpectedly good performances. And I think Ben Stiller takes it, because the first time I saw this, I'm like, whoa, shit, that's Ben Stiller. What's he doing in here? But now he gives such a good performance that's so well capped off by like, it's been a rough year, Dad.
That's
just delivered with so much. So even though he's not fully letting him in, he's opened a wall. And you can tell like it's the exact right delivery that you know he's ready to open up a bit now, and he's not this hard exterior to his father anymore. And he's been hiding hurt this whole time. Maybe he's hurting Royal because he's been so hurt. Oh, Ben Stiller, you did it, you dog. How about you?
Yeah, I really like Richie. And like in flashes, I like Eli Cash, but like he also is like kind of like a weird side character. But like Owen Wilson brings a lot of charm to him. And I really like Royal. I think he's just like a great character. And, you know, he's got this sort of asshole vibe, but like you can't help but love him in a lot of ways. And even though he's just such a shit, like I just like really enjoy watching him. And of course Gene Hackman is a fucking master, so he does such a great job with it.
Do we want to move on to some reviews?
Let's see what other people thought about it.
All right, on good old Rotten Tomatoes, the critics have given this only an 81%. But it is buoyed by the audience's 89.
Damn.
Yeah, people came out for our boy Wes Andy. on IMDb and on Metacritic, this will have a 76.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I feel it. It's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Totally. Wes Anderson's not the cup of tea that everyone wants to be drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Another place that this did, yeah, fine, was the box office, where it made $71 million on a budget of $21 million.
That's pretty good.
That's actually, though, that's more of a, yeah, fine, more of like a, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
Especially a $21 million budget seems low for the star power that you have in this.
Mm.
But I feel like Wes is one of the directors. This is his cast, his crew.
Well, yeah, and especially with Owen Wilson writing it, and him and Luke Wilson and Wes all being friends and having that relationship, like they'll clearly take a cut. And Bill Murray, even, like, I'm sure he would do anything for Wes at this point. So yeah,
exactly. This would finish at number 54 at the box office of the year, which is actually pretty impressive
considering like the last like two movies that we talked about in the last four were not even on the rankings. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's just nice to actually control F a movie and have it pop up.
Yeah, totally.
Well, that's going to bring us to our reviews. Mm-hmm. And Kyle, you're starting this off, as is tradition, with your enjoyment score.
I wrote a 4. I think I'm bumping it. I think I went 4.5.
4.5. Yeah. Nicely done. I think this is going to be my first 5 for enjoyment.
Wow.
I was really captivated by it on the second watching, where like I really was into the stories more. And I think what helped with that was the first time you're learning a lot of information all at once.
Yeah.
But I had an easier time understanding each of the characters this time and watching each trajectory and seeing how being a gifted child to burnout adult has affected them. And I was really into it. It was a really good character kind of movie.
Totally.
That's a 5. Kyle, what's your craft?
I gave this a 4. I think it is a very well-made film. Clearly, Wes Anderson is insanely great at making these. I'm trying to figure out why I docked it. I might even go 4.5. I think it's a 4.5. I don't know if it's a perfectly crafted, perfectly made movie, but like it's, yeah, I'm trying to think about why I docked it a whole point, and I don't know. I think it's 4.5.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I'm also going to give this a 4.5. It is very Wes Anderson style, which is both a good and a bad thing. It's good because I enjoy his style. It's bad because he's done it so often that it's just kind of a safe thing to go with. And nothing was so out of that left field that it really drove me to give it a 5.
Yeah.
But I'll be goddamned if he does not have that thing down pat.
Totally.
What's your execution?
I gave this a 4. I think it is very well written and well acted. I think I just sometimes got lost in certain characters, like maybe Bill Murray's character and sometimes Eli Cash. Like the whole thing of it, I don't think it's perfect, but it does like come together really well. And it is incredibly well acted.
I am right there with you. I'm giving it a 4. I do think those two characters kind of got lost in the works.
Yeah.
Couldn't get quite fleshed out enough with the high bar that was there. Otherwise, that could have been 5 potential.
Totally.
And what is your rewatchability?
After watching it a second time, I think this is a 3.5. I will definitely watch this again. I think it is an essential part of Wes Anderson's filmography, and it's an easy one to recommend from Wes Anderson's filmography. Easier than some other ones like Moonrise Kingdom. I think I would always recommend this one over Moonrise Kingdom, but like maybe not over Grand Budapest. Like I don't know if I would recommend this over Grand Budapest. So I think for me, it's a 3.5, but I will be returning to this.
That's fair. I've been dancing around a bit. I do think I'm going to give this a 3. I'm very glad that I gave this a second watch, but I feel like I've had my moment with it and I'm probably not going to return to it. I would never turn it down if offered, but I think I've had such a good experience with that second watch that like I can put a wrap on that.
Totally.
But very worth a second watch, in my opinion. So that's going to be 3 city.
I feel like one of these days I'm going to go in chronological order and watch all of Wes Anderson's films, because there is some that I'm still missing. Like I haven't seen The Life Aquatic still, and I haven't seen The Darjeeling Limited.
Interesting.
So I'll have to get to those.
It'd probably be worth watching those all in order, sitting down, seeing how the style develops, I think would be really cool.
Totally.
All right, Kyle, you've given this a 16.5 out of 20 for an 83. I have given this a 16.5 out of 20 for an 83. Time for ranking. Kyle, you have top to bottom Donnie Darko, Memento, Shrek, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World. Where is the Royal Tenenbaums?
This is my new number 4 under Shrek, but over Ocean's 11.
Interesting. I thought with that ranking, I had my cursor a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, it is very close to Shrek. I think it could have been 3 or 4, and I might regret this decision later, depending on how much stuff separates Royal Tenenbaums and Shrek, because I feel like I had the same positive experience out of both of them. It's a weird spot that they're in, but I feel right now, because of the rewatchability, probably, it's a 4. Yeah, it's number 4.
Go with your gut.
Yeah.
You can always, at the end of the season, if you made an egregious mistake, you can fix it, but you got to do you.
Yes. What about you?
I'm putting this number 2.
Damn, okay.
I feel like this is a more complete movie than Shrek.
Totally.
Even though Shrek, so rewatchable.
Oh, yeah.
So and enjoyable and lighthearted. Mm-hmm. I think I really enjoyed that second watching. I got a lot out of it emotionally. Mm-hmm. And that's going to bring it to number two, which will bring my order to Donnie Darko, Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Memento, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World. My top is feeling like a more complete top. I'm feeling better about this now. You're deep in thought.
I'm really what thinking is going, about it.
Give us
I
the play
know.
By play. We're not. This hasn't been that long of an episode yet. What's going through that head of yours?
I'm really thinking about whether or not it's above or below Shrek. Fuck, it might be above Shrek. It might be number three.
You bumping up?
I think I'm bumping.
Let's bump up. It's not too late.
I'm sitting here reflecting, thinking about them both, trying to play them side by side in my head. You know, then I saw her face. And I'm a believer that Shrek's number four.
You're a believer. Shrek number four, Royal Tenenbaums number three.
Yeah.
Ghost World still last.
Yes.
That is quite the ranking. Well, now that we have come through, what a roller coaster of a ranking.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had a live fire reversal, but
I don't know if it's ever been that complicated.
No.
Yeah, wow.
Wild. And from two very different movies. They are not similar at all.
Yeah. I mean, they're comedies. They're both kind of comedy.
I guess so, yeah. That's true. Well, fun Letterboxd time. This has a 4.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd for one of the highest possible rankings.
Damn, I think that's the highest ranking we've had. So
probably.
Far.
Letterboxd refuses to go above 4, so yeah. This is a special movie. Where this is also a special movie where the reviews are trash.
Oh my goodness.
This is another one where it's like every single person just quotes, "It's been a rough year, Dad." You're the 110th person to do it. You don't have to. Just drop a star rating.
Yeah.
That's all you need at that point. Two somewhat redeemable reviews. We are going to start it off with Abby, 4.5 stars. Wes, for $1, make a film where a dog doesn't die.
True.
He kills a lot of dogs.
Yeah. Does this got something against it?
I don't know.
And also, okay, just getting a new dog would not immediately trump the grief of losing a dog.
Nope.
Especially after that dog survived a fucking plane crash.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I understand, you know, Ben Stiller being overprotective of his sons, but also the dog?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
I wonder, has Wes ever owned a dog? Because he views them as very replaceable and also very killable.
Yeah. And like the dog fights?
Like, yeah, just throw away. Yeah, I know where dog fights are. Let's take my grandkids there. Oof, yeah, there's an anti-dog skew with Wes Anderson. Next, we have Sarah with 4 stars. My favorite part was when Ben Stiller and his children wore matching black tracksuits to Royal's funeral. Almost no one else was wearing any black, so that was very classy of them.
That was so funny, those costume choices, how just for the funeral, they switched from the red to black ones.
Now, did they just have black tracksuits, or is that specifically their mourning tracksuits? Because I feel like it might be. Those are like deep in the closet, the funeral tracksuits. Yeah. All right, awards time. Kyle, do you think this got any award traction? And if so, what?
I want to say screenplay, but this might also be before Wes Anderson was like kind of in the Academy's realm, like sphere of influence. So I don't know. Maybe screenplay.
You'd be right. Hell, this did get a nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay, famously not winning it.
Adapted Screenplay?
That should say Best Original Screenplay. That's a typo.
Okay.
Yeah, no, because I think I got confused because it pretends to be based off a book, but it's not. It is a Best Original Screenplay. Yeah. Other notable things that this had, it was nominated for Best Original Screenplay at the BAFTAs as well. And this won the Golden Globe for Best Male Actor in a Musical or Comedy for Gene Hackman.
Yeah. He's deserved. Somebody that I'm going to be on like the radar because he wasn't nominated for an Academy Award.
No.
I feel like this is one of those performances where nowadays they might try to category fraud it into supporting because he doesn't have a lot of screen time.
Probably. But, and I feel like we could take it wherever we want, season wrap style.
Because it's so hard to put like a label as one person as a lead. Because they all have like equal screen time.
This is a true ensemble cast. Yeah. Everyone is equal in that regard. Mm. Interesting facts, you know, because the Letterboxd was light. Mm. The fans on Letterboxd let us down. The interesting facts did not. This is heavy and I have many. Are we ready to get interesting?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. We'll start it off here with the hand that is seen with the BB lodged between its knuckles is not Ben Stiller's, but Andrew Wilson's, brother of Owen and Luke Wilson. When they were children, Owen fired a BB gun at Andrew's hand, and the BB has been there ever since.
That's funny.
That is kind of funny.
Especially because Owen Wilson was a writer on that, so he clearly wrote that with the idea that he would have to use his brother's hand.
That is kind of funny. Cool. The original hawk used to play Mordecai was kidnapped during shooting and held for ransom. Production could not wait for him to be returned, so the bird that appears later in the movie has more white feathers because it's a different bird.
Oh, and they just put that in the movie. They just mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you could avoid it because it is a different bird. And I imagine it's going to be hard to find that similar looking of one.
Yeah.
So I think you got to work with it. And I guess they do.
Yeah.
Now that I've read that, it does feel kind of sure. And they're like, oh man, look, it has more white feathers.
Yeah.
This is something we were aware of and planned for. Gene Hackman, knowing that he was near the end of his career, signed on to this movie under the agreed promise from Wes Anderson that it would be a fun and relaxing experience. This did not transpire and led to Hackman becoming frustrated and verbally abusing Anderson on set over trivial matters. Such was the extent of his frustration that cast members became angered and felt that what Hackman was doing amounted to bullying, leading to Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelica Huston avoiding Hackman on set.
Oh no.
Bill Murray saw this happening and decided to intervene, calling Hackman out on his verbal abuse of Anderson and choosing to come to work on his days off as a show of solidarity with Anderson.
Wow.
So, great performance. Kind of a piece of shit, though.
Yeah.
Damn.
And what an absolute bro move for Bill Murray.
Like, honestly.
That's standing up for your friends.
Yeah. Fucking mean Hackman. In further, Gene Hackman is kind of shit news. Gene Hackman mentioned in interviews that he was somewhat hesitant to accept the part as he felt that he himself had been insensitive to his own family at different points in his life. He asked them if they would find him playing this character uncomfortable for their own sakes, but they all agreed he should accept the part.
Hmm.
It is a strange thing that you have been absent enough to your family that you recognize it to the point of needing their permission, but not like fixing that. That's like, guys, I know I've been neglectful. I've been downright a piece of shit. Can I make money off that though? Like, I've just been method acting for this role I didn't know I was going to get. Oh, it's okay. God.
Wow.
Originally, Gene Wilder turned down the role of Royal Tenenbaum due to his retirement.
Hmm. Yeah. So they were going after Gene's.
Yeah. Hey, they clearly were. The flip side of a fun fact from earlier this season, Danny Glover, Luke Wilson, and Owen Wilson all turned down parts in Ocean's 11 to appear in this film.
There we go.
Yeah, full circle.
I think it was worth it on all accounts, especially considering Owen Wilson wrote this film.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to pry him off this set.
No.
Ben Stiller asked co-writer and director Wes Anderson why his character and his sons always wore red tracksuits. Anderson replied that because Chaz was so obsessed with safety after the death of his wife, that red would make everyone easier to see in case of an emergency. Anderson later admitted on the DVD audio commentary that he had no real reason behind the costumes. He just always imagined them wearing tracksuits. That is a good save, though.
Yeah.
That is a satisfactory answer that you pulled out of your ass, Wes Anderson. The scene where Richie punches the glass in Mordecai's pen was unscripted. This was improvised by Luke Wilson on the spot, and the scene quickly cuts to Richie and Rally talking up close. This is because when Wilson punched the glass, co-writer and director Wes Anderson thought he seriously hurt himself. So he just cut it. He should have let the magic keep rolling.
Oh my.
But he also had his hand wrapped up afterwards, which is probably real, and he probably was bleeding a lot. So,
man, what's with these actors going in, punching glass or mirrors, and actually injuring themselves and then just being like, oh, I guess whatever.
Does everyone forget that glass cuts the shit out of you?
I mean, it did add to the effect of the scene, so kind of a cool choice, but I mean, you only have one shot at that. So.
Exactly. Man, good work. Mm. The brand of cigarettes Margot smoked throughout the movie were only sold in Ireland and were discontinued in the 1970s. According to Wes Anderson in the DVD insert, this was intentional because of the 1970s theme and to make Margot's secret smoking habit just a little stranger.
Mm.
Who would have picked up on that, though? That's insane.
I don't know. Cigarette connoisseurs.
From Ireland. From the 70s. It's actually a pretty big scene.
Mm.
Danny Glover's look in the film was modeled after UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, This was Wes Anderson's idea after Glover, who knows Anon personally, introduced Anderson to him at a UN event.
Cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Couple more. Wes Anderson and Andrew Wilson provided the voices for the commentators during Richie Tenenbaum's tennis match.
Hmm.
Many viewers thought it was a cameo from Jason Schwartzman, star of Anderson's previous film Rushmore. Also, the Wilson brothers all have similar sounding voices, therefore many people thought it was Owen Wilson providing the voice of the second commentator. Another note, Anderson also played bass on the reggae music in the initial sequence.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, one thing we never mentioned was that Alec Baldwin is the narrator.
Oh, I didn't even, attention to that. Oh, no, wow. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. The first time we watched it, I think I couldn't place the voice. I could hear it and I knew that it was a familiar voice, but it wasn't until the credits that I realized. And so this time I was listening to it through and it's only pops up every now and again. But yeah, Alec Baldwin.
Oh, interesting. Lastly, the spots on the Dalmatian mice were put on with Sharpies. Understandable because Dalmatian mice... not real.
Okay. Interesting. Well, did they get the no animals were harmed in the making of this movie at the end?
No, those are real dog fights. They killed dogs, Kyle. This is a Wes Anderson movie. They're not escaping without some dead dogs kicking around.
I mean, if they have that, then they're just that much better than Gosford Park, at least.
Yeah, so, wow. Oh, we're actually just murking birds in the sky. God, you can fake that. Unbelievable. Also not important to really show birds dying. You know they're shooting. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Not critical there. Sharpies on mice. That's the main thing that happened in this movie.
Well, any final thoughts on the Royal Tenenbaums?
Nah, that's Tenenbaums for you.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think I've said all I need to say on Tenenbaums.
Me as well.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 9 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We love to hear your guys' thoughts on this film or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question or recommendation or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter and Jason's at Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
Should we do something?
I've had lots of girlfriends, and I don't understand why this one is any different.
Oh, God, you don't think he wants to?
Oh, he's not going to marry her.
Well, then what's he doing with her?
She probably loves him. Girls always have.
You know, I've been ignoring our difference in age, but you keep playing with those blocks. She's not divorced yet, you know.
It's the same thing.
Maybe he still loves her.
That's right. Next time we're talking about the next Best Picture nominee this season, In the Bedroom. That's the name of the film. We're not recording In the Bedroom.
Could be.
Yep.
We could be.
We could just move over. But make sure to watch it before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.